Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Whenever you are and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you are one of our geeks and sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, we're going to help you out the best way we know how by being in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes, pushing you on, motivating you, maybe distracting you a little bit with gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsor this week, Molecule. Molecule brings the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games, and there are many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who always blames it on the rain. Yeah, yeah. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
It's LA raining, which means if my internet stops working, that's 100% why, Jeff, and you know that. Mm-hmm. My house is going to fall apart. Like, LA is beautiful, and then like two drops of water fall out of the sky, and we are gremlins, you know.
Right. Not because you're going to play Fortnite Season 8. You are. It's the rain. That's your official story. That's what you're sticking with.
So we're recording this early. It's Saturday, and I tweeted it out. I jumped back into Fortnite first game, Victory Royale. You know what I mean? So just back off.
So now you're retiring.
Yes.
Forever.
I played three games, and now I'm done again forever.
Fair enough. Hey guys, we have an awesome show for you this week. I am so excited. We got tons of news to talk about. We got games galore, maybe a Game of the Year contender already here in early March for me. So much to talk about, and we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, oh man, I'm excited because DLC stands for Distinguished Leisure Citizen. Because we have one of the Game Awards Global Gaming Citizens, as well as the COO of the wonderful charity Able Gamers, Mr. Steven Spawn joins us for the first time. Hey, Steven.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
You know, I can't complain. I didn't get any Fortnite wins today, so I feel like I'm a little bit behind the curve. But
well, I will just say that it is a 80% chance that Christian was playing with all bots and he just didn't know it.
No, so. I was playing on Switch, but please know this is my second ever. So like it's pretty much an everyday thing for me.
we got a lot to talk about. So let's jump right in and start the show the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by visiting our subreddit, that's 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or by sending us an email. We love hearing from you over at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Steven, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Oh, that's absolutely hands down going to be the Borderlands 3 possible reveal.
Yes, we got... I mean, this is, I think, still in rumor territory, but it seems pretty solid.
Does it? I feel like every event, this is the rumor. I hope it's true this time.
Well, Gearbox came out before E3 last year and put a kibosh on anybody thinking that Borderlands 3 was going to be revealed at E3. So they have a history of squashing rumors when they get too prevalent. And this one has been running wild for a few days now. And they have been stoking it. So Gearbox has been tweeting and kind of teasing stuff and getting people pumped about their PAX East panel, which they say, quote, will be your opportunity to get a behind-the-scenes look at Gearbox Software and Gearbox Publishing, along with the latest news and updates from the makers of Borderlands. First right there, Battleborn, Brothers in Arms, and more. We will have never-before-seen reveals, exclusives, and surprises, so don't miss out. So, Steven, it sounds like you are a Borderlands fan. What are you hoping to see from a Borderlands 3 if it happens?
You know, I absolutely loved the Borderlands 2 entire feel, just the aesthetic of how they not only do the visual representation, the storylines are always the best. I had been running around yelling plot twist for like a year after I played that. It was so good. I love the fact that they interject so much humor into such a dark title, just in general, the whole feel of it. But I was so excited when I saw one of the rumors, I believe coming out of VG247, saying that whatever they're announcing will be released this year. And I was like, oh, please pull a Respawn. Please just be like, and it's out tomorrow. Play it.
That would be pretty rad. I mean, the one that you mentioned, the visual style, which is very, very specific to Borderlands. That is the one thing we have seen, right? We had last GDC, Randy Pitchford came out and showed what he repeatedly kept saying was not a video game, just a tech demo, but it was clearly the next gen tech that they were using for Borderlands 3. And it looked really cool. I mean, it's that same pseudo cel shaded look that we all know from the Borderlands franchise. But
which is also just a quick note. Remember when that wasn't the look of Borderlands? Remember very first Borderlands when it was like Gears of War meets Red Faction, maybe like style?
Well, yeah, Borderlands was shown at E3 like three different E3s. And I remember covering it for the Totally Rad Show. And we were excited about Borderlands when it was looking like, a very realistic shooter. So, it's become iconic, that look. And it looks like they're using new techniques, at least based on that tech demo that they were showing, to make it even more vivid and detailed within that sort of comic book, art looking version that we know. So that is exciting. Steven, do you think they need to add anything new to the formula to change up Borderlands 3 to make – or is it just like give me more?
No, I'm absolutely certain that they're going to drop 100 characters onto an island and they're all going to have to fight.
Yeah,
right.
I really wish that they'd be like, congratulations, Borderlands 3 is now an MMORPG. That'd be fantastic. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they'll stick with the formula that works. I think that the industry has largely recognized that sort of dark in and out comic book humor style is theirs. And if you've noticed, like, no other game has really tried to tap into that same walking the line feel. So I'm kind of thinking they're going to stick to what they know works, and they're going to try to do it more over the top, maybe introduce a few more characters. The one complaint I did hear about too was that you sort of had to be the run and gun and drink life support kind of character. There was no way to be a support class, so maybe they'll add in something for some more playstyles. But overall, I love it. I love the way they do their keys, the way they hand those out over social media and stuff. I think that's very interactive. So I think they've got their hand on the pulse of what works.
Yeah, I could get very excited of it just being more of the same as well. But you make a joke about the battle royale-ness of it, but I could imagine a Borderlands battle royale where you land on an island and it's just guns everywhere. Instead of it being like scarce and you have to find weapons, it's just like covered wall to wall. You just land on a pile of weapons and be like, that's how we're doing it in Borderlands.
I'll just be like Scrooge McDuck just diving into the weapons.
Yeah, exactly. So Christian, we have Far Cry New Dawn, we have Rage 2, we have Fallout, we have Metro. we are sort of post-apocalypse out here. We're drowning in post-apocalypse. Is there room for Borderlands in your heart? More Borderlands, especially if it's this year?
I think there is room for more Borderlands. My heart is guarded. I'm not sure if this is Borderlands. Like, part of me is like, this is going to be a Brother in Arms.
That's Royale, what they've been teasing. You know? Yeah, we got more Battleborn. That's what you wanted, right, guys?
Or Battleborn is redone to be more like Apex Legends, right? Like, it was close, but not quite. Like, I don't trust, because that we're going to get Borderlands 3. I hope. But the last time the rumors were out, it's like, yeah, this, that, and the other. And then it was Borderlands 2 VR, which is like, fine. But that's like, you know, your uncle going like, look at this $20 bill. It's new. It's shiny. It's crisp. And you're like, oh, wow, that's so cool. And he's like, sure, here's a quarter, kid. Get out of here. And you're like, what happened?
But I honestly think they know what they're doing. It clearly, from the reporting that we got after E3, was almost an E3 reveal. So the game seems like it was close, right? And then they decided not to at the last minute. So it feels like timing-wise, it makes sense. It feels like if the drumbeat of Borderlands 3 was happening, they would, you know, come out and say no like they did last time. I'm hopeful this time. I think this is going to happen.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome. I think there is room for more Borderlands because nothing has done it. I think, like Steven said, nothing has really done it the way they did it. Even, you know, OG Destiny, when it came out, it was like, oh, it's got Borderlands, like the numbers flying off people kind of thing that MMOs have done for years. But when Borderlands brought that and Borderlands 2 upped the ante, every other game kind of gets compared to that. And the way you mentioned, the way they deal out weapons throughout the game in such fun, creative ways where you're constantly leveling up. It's a franchise that many have emulated, but few have successfully copied or exceeded. And so I'm curious to see Gearbox, what they can do, because I think that is one of the hardest parts about making Borderlands 3 is Borderlands 2 is almost perfect. You know, like, what do you do? It's just more of, I know they did the pre-sequel, and that was kind of just more of the same, and it felt a little flat. It's big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Yeah, but it remains to be seen. PAX East coming right around the corner, so we will know more in just a couple of weeks. I remain hopeful. Christian, what is your story of the week?
I mean, the story of the week, there's other things I want to talk about, but the story of the week has to be Pokemon Gen 8. Sword and Shield were announced with the shortest Nintendo Direct I think I've ever seen. I was like, let me get my cereal ready. Oh, it's over? I missed it? Let me watch the replay. But official reveal of Sword and Shield coming out late 2019, which I'm guessing is like what? It's pre-Christmas, December 20, something like that, after Thanksgiving, but before Christmas in that little window.
They're a fall game. They're a big fall release.
Beautiful graphics, I think. They showed a lot of pre-rendered footage, kind of the trailer, but they showed a little bit of the world and the map, and it looks like random battles are back. We got three new starter Pokemon.
But you were so excited that random battles were gone.
No, I said I really enjoy that random battles are gone and the way Pokemon Let's Go plays, because the capture mechanic is totally different. So having random battles with that type of capture mechanic, I think, would be problematic, because in Let's Go, you're throwing the Pokeball the way you do in Pokemon Go to capture your various Pokemon, and you're not needing to memorize the rock, paper, scissor mechanic as much in Let's Go. But in traditional Pokemon games, I think that random battle element is very important to have you stumble upon battles, because you need to be forced, at least I should say I need to be forced to memorize you know, who does better over who and what type over what type, and so you're building and building and building and grinding so that then when you get into the important battles, you're ready to go and you get to a gym or whatnot. I think it looks awesome. I'm super excited. I'm already on Team Sword. I don't know why, but I like Team Sword, and I'm Grookey. I'm all about that grass type monkey Grookey. The other one is Scorbunny and the water type Sobble, and I think they're all cute characters, and it's real. Nintendo looks like they have a heck of a 2019, and I'm curious, Steven, if Sword and Shield kind of rocked your world, or just seemed like more of the same.
I think, unfortunately for me, Nintendo has just repeatedly let me down as a disabled gamer. You know, they put up so many barriers to entry for someone who needs accessibility concerns. I'm hesitant, you know, when we had the multiplayer Pokemon, you know, you had to get out and run around, and, you know, I had to repeatedly tell people who follow me that, you know, there's ways around it. I can't tell you how to hack a game, but you can get out there and play the map, you know. And with the new Let's Go, you know, it was heartbreaking to see that the only way that you could really throw the ball was to pick up the device and move it around. So I'm worried. I'm worried that they're not going to learn any lessons. They're still not really talking to people like myself, accessibility people, you know, Able Gamers, the company I work for. It's you know, it's sad because Nintendo Pokemon is such an amazing title. I love Eevee. Best Pokemon ever. Fight me.
I agree. I'm on the same side. There's no fight.
So, there you go. All right, so yeah, I mean, you know, I hope that they learn some lessons, and I hope that they allow more people to get in there and enjoy this kind of atmosphere, because Pokemon is iconic. I don't think there's any way you can deny that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that's something that Nintendo has ignored or not been open enough to, because you feel like Nintendo, of all companies, with their, you know, wholesome nature and wanting to be as inclusive as they can to so many people, this being a blind spot for them, it doesn't make much sense and is really disappointing. So, yeah.
I think Nintendo is slow on the uptake for a lot of things, though, right? I think they do what they're going to do, and they talk about their blue ocean strategy, but that was their blue ocean strategy. And if you look at online gaming or kind of any trends that other companies are maybe doing, I think Nintendo is slow to adopt those and slow to change from what they think they need to do. And I think it's problematic. It has been problematic for years, and it continues to be, which is unfortunate because their characters are so iconic, and it stinks when they're not, you know, you can't play online the way you can anywhere else.
So it's so weird too, because little known fact, Nintendo was actually the first to come out with a controller for people with disabilities.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, there was an apparatus that they had for the original NES that you could put around your neck and you could operate the controller with your mouth, and it was great. It was expensive for the time, you know, $800 or so in our currency today, but, you know, with inflation and whatnot. But, you know, it was ahead of its time, and it was so great. And, you know, I just think that there's ways that you could include Pokemon for everybody by pushing a few buttons without making it less fun for those who like, you know, trying to throw the ball expertly with a curve and a spin and three top hats or whatever you have to do.
Right. Yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I thought you were going to make a joke about Robbie the robot. I don't think Robbie was accessible.
not so much.
Another aspect of this that I think is interesting to bring up is that we just got a Nintendo Direct. I mean, it was just a couple of weeks ago that Nintendo laid out a whole bunch of games for 2019, and was, you know, sort of had this compendium of big announcements. And here we are not too much later, and here we have the official Pokemon Sword and Shield announcement. I think they're changing up the cadence of how these things can be announced and publicized, and, you know, they don't have to wait for big tent poles to make announcements. They can do it at their pace whenever they want. They don't care that it was just a couple of weeks ago they announced a bunch of other things. They didn't feel the need to put Pokemon in that announcement because they can just do another one whenever they feel like it. I think we're just in a different paradigm now, and I find it interesting, and I just wanted to highlight that. I think it's an interesting place to be for the industry.
Yeah, I guess that's one area where, as I said, they're slow to adapt, where Nintendo has very much been ahead of its time, right? Ahead of the curve in terms of how they present their information, when they get it out, and how they do things. And I'm curious to see how Sony does or does not follow suit, especially as we get closer to E3 and how that shifts this marketing landscape going forward for the rest of 2019.
Yeah. All right, so my story of the week, I'm excited about this Dune news. We got news this week that Funcom, makers of a lot of different games, including the Conan, the latest iterations of Conan games, including Conan Exiles, is signed on with Legendary Studios to make games based on the Dune franchise. In fact, at least three games on PC and consoles. the first of which will be an open world multiplayer title.
Which is just chapter one of the book, by the way. It's a whole game, but it's still just the first chapter.
As a fan of the Dune book and the old movie mostly, and you know, knowing that we're getting a new Dune movie from Denis Villeneuve, who like just hits home runs, that guy's amazing, with a cast that is unbelievable. Just the more news I hear about this Dune project, the more I'm like, this thing is going to be incredible. I think Dune is going to sort of resurface as a major sci-fi franchise, although they've just entered pre-production on this game. So it's not like the game's going to hit when the movie hits in 2020. It feels like the game is several years out. But I don't know. What do you think, Steven? Do you think Funcom is the right people to handle Dune? Are you a Dune fan? What do you hope to see from a Dune game?
I think Funcom has done such an excellent job at those kind of legacy titles where, you know, you're sort of wondering, oh no, how are they going to handle Conan the Barbarian? How are they going to handle Dune? I think they've done well. I think they do their research on, you know, what the fans are going to enjoy. I think they're good at catering to various audiences and not chasing the flavor of the month. You know, we joked about Battle Royales either. You know, we're not going to drop 100 worms onto an island and try to fight them.
Although I might play that. That sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, second thought, maybe that would be a good idea.
Got to get the spice.
Right. Yeah. Funcom, if you're listening to us, we all get a percentage. but no, I think it's going to be great. Do you think it's the – is it the massively multiplayer part that's got you so intrigued?
Well, I think open world multiplayer title is open to interpretation. I don't know exactly what that means. It feels like – every game now is kind of an open world multiplayer title. So I don't know. Is that a Destiny Anthem style? Is that like a full MMO? Is that a survival game a la Conan? You know, what exactly is that? I remain hesitant because there's a spectrum in there where I'm excited and a spectrum where I'm less excited. So, you know, I don't know. Like I said, I think this is going to be many, many years out. We're probably 3 or 4 years away from seeing what this game is.
If it's soon, it's a Conan reskin, right? Like, that's my gut. If it's soon, I think not reskin, I don't mean to be that dismissive of it, but it's taking a lot of those learnings. And I think there's a cool Dune game based around some of the mechanics in Conan that could be extrapolated out and built into a world that is desolate and and difficult in its own ways, right? Maybe it's several years out and they're building things, you know, from the ground up. But I'd imagine there's a place where some of the technology from their games out right now make their way into this thing.
I feel like Dune is a little bit more cerebral, a sci-fi property that I just don't want to be running around blasting stuff all the time. You know, I would like it to be a little political, perhaps be a little on the trading side of thing. You know, that's really what that universe means to me, is it's more machinations than it is just, you know, running around with blasters destroying stuff.
A little bit more detail, a little bit more context and content.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, I think the easy way out would just be, you know, like you said, sort of lots of sand and guns.
What if it ends up being like Eve, but you know, like not in space in the same way, where that is just wild. trading, political, massively multiplayer spreadsheets.
I mean, there's something cool about that. I don't know.
I like Eve. I tell you what, I take flack for it every time I mention it, but I like that game. I wish it was more popular in the audience than it is, but you know, yeah, it really boils down to math and spreadsheets. That's true. But I like the attempt at the scope they made. And I keep hoping that they're going to try. It would be neat to see a Dune universe that is that deep.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, any game that is that deep is immediately interesting to me. And doing that in the Dune universe? Oh, yeah, I'd give that a shot for sure. Even though I don't play Eve. So I'm a little bit of a hypocrite. But I mean, it's super intimidated by Eve. But maybe that's because... I mean, I think there's a little bit like of a way in when you already know the IP and you can be like, well, I like Dune. I have a basic understanding of how Dune works. Maybe that could get me into a game like Eve and wouldn't be as quite as intimidating. I don't know.
I love the stories that come out of Eve, and I am so scared to death to ever play it. I have a family to think of. I can't.
It's totally true.
Please don't make a game that takes my life. No.
Another game that takes my life.
Yeah.
All right. A couple of other news stories that I think would be interesting to talk about. First of all, Christian, I know you put in into our outline here that we may know the Last of Us 2 date.
Yeah, I saw this from friend of show, Anthony Taramina's. I don't think he wrote the story, but I saw it over on Game Rant. So hello, Anthony. Hello, Game Rant. And it's like a Peruvian retailer, Law Gamers. They have a promo image that, in my opinion, it looks like they made. That it shows an October 2019 date. Oh, come on.
Brain I is... doubt. I called doubt. I don't Me, know. I,
yes.
I
composer. A Academy Award winning composer who does the score for... For what?
Isn't it Bear?
No, it's like Goose. Come on, Brain.
It's not Bear, it's Goose.
All we care about is Bear McCreary anyway, so that's fine.
McCreary, not McCreary. Bear McCreary. It's not Bear, Bear McCreary.
It's McCreary. It's fine.
Gustavo Santala.
Cool.
Is a composer. Academy Award. He's great.
Just like I said, Goose.
He has said something like, it's coming out soon, but like, what does that mean? But a composer saying coming out soon and then maybe an October 2019 release date. Maybe, but I also feel like if it was October 2019, they'd be at E3 this year. It's just a little thing, but I wanted to highlight it because a boy can dream, you know?
PS5 launch title. That's what's happening. PS5 launch title.
I don't know. There's not the install base.
They don't care. That's going to make the install base. That's what they want. Anyway, I think that Peruvian retailer might be hopeful, and they're just putting stuff in the catalog. But who knows? It could happen. Stranger things have happened.
I'm telling you, it's, you know, we touched on it through almost every story that we've talked about. I honestly think we're reaching a point where the press cycle of 2 to 3 years out, starting the hype machine, is going away. I think we're going to start seeing the press cycle be 6 months or less. I think you're going to see more respawn Apexes that just, done, we're done with the game. Here you go, go play it. Because, especially in our Twitch culture, I think it just pushes games better than this hype machine.
And I say bravo. I say bravo. Bring on that reality. I'm ready for the let's not talk about it until it's almost done. It avoids all of the, you promised this, you brought a screenshot where puddles are shinier than these puddles. It's like it avoids all of that because you get to market the game that's basically done. Or, like in the case of Apex, you let the game speak for itself. And you say, hey, we made something great. Here it is. I welcome our new immediacy overlords.
Right? There's a game called Crowfall that I've been waiting for like nearly 4 years now. It's almost become a joke because our entire group of friends was like, this is going to be amazing sauce. It's going to be so spectacular. And then the next year, yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to come out this year, right? No, it's not. All right.
Yeah, the amaze sauce slowly over time starts to coagulate and get less delicious. Yeah, yeah, I'm ready for that though, guys. Well, so we don't know about Last of Us 2, and I'm reluctant to bring this up, but it has been a big part of video game news over the week. If you've been paying attention, you know that THQ Nordic really stepped in it this week in a really befuddling, baffling, stupid way. They decided to do an Ask Me Anything with a website that is just the worst place in the world, 8chan. And there's been a lot of reporting on this. There's been apologies that seem sort of, from my perspective, a little disingenuous based on claiming that they didn't know what this website was all about when some of the other
messaging around it. Or based on their actual replies and posts.
Yeah.
On the website while the AMA was happening. You can't be like, we didn't know what we were. Oh, we didn't know. And then their replies and they're like, ha ha ha, we're on your side. I'm exaggerating. But like, you can't have your cake and eat it too unless it's your birthday and you made your own cake.
So the long and the short of it, from my perspective, is they decided to court an audience that I don't even think there's a perspective where you can say these are reasonable humans. This is a place that people go to be unreasonable. This is a place people go to trade in, discuss, and revel in the worst parts of humanity. And I believe in freedom of speech, and it's certainly within their right to go and have these kinds of discussions in a public forum. It's not a place that I would ever visit.
It's not, they don't have the right to have all of the conversations they're having.
Well,
freedom of speech has limits. Violence, harm, underage porn. You're not allowed to do. No. That exceeds a former lawyer, no longer practicing, blah, blah, blah. That's beyond a First Amendment issue. I don't think we need to. I don't want to push on it on anyone else. I'm not going to hedge here. No, you don't get to have that. I'm sorry. No one's going to fight me for liking Evie, but people will fight me on this. But I'm willing to draw that line.
I wanted to present it as a given. The given is this is a terrible place. I really don't think there's an argument to be made where it's not terrible. And the idea that THQ Nordic would seek to market themselves to this audience specifically just feels like a really bonehead move, a dumb PR from a PR strategy, but also kind of a despicable act if these are the people that you're hoping to court to play your games and you want to play to them. It doesn't make any sense to me. So it really lowers my opinion of a publisher and a developer that I thought had been doing some really interesting, fun stuff in the last, acquiring cool IP and doing some interesting things. It really lowers my opinion of them. Steven, do you have any response to this story that kind of blew up this week?
You know, I am a charity runner, you know, second in command of a very large international charity. Even though I'm here as a person, my name is always synonymous with my charity. And so I always have to be careful about lightning rod subjects. I think that the people who were running the PR department dropped the ball. I think that I don't want to speculate on whether or not they knew what they were doing and they did it anyway, or whether or not they, you know, just thought they could pull a fast one. That's not for me to speculate. I am sad at the non-apology. In this day and age with hyper information everywhere on the internet, it's really, really hard for me to believe that someone who is the marketing director of any company, let alone a large company, just doesn't know about the place that they're about to go. I mean, I never personally accept an invite to do any AMA, let alone even this podcast, without doing my research on what kind of place is it. You know, I'm not going to go support somewhere that I wouldn't support normally. So, you know, I think that excuse was kind of weak, and they could have done that a lot better by saying, we messed up. Yep, sorry, instead of this. I had no idea. That's so weird. What a weird place. I don't know. It's not good.
It just means you're bad at your job. If you had no idea, then you just didn't do your job well. And yeah, as many people have pointed out, Philip Brock, who is the PR and marketing director at THQ Nordic, put out a statement that said, I am not a white supremacist nor into child pornography. So anytime you need to say that publicly to clarify anything, you messed up. If you feel the need to make those statements because there's some ambiguity about those points, you're already really in the wrong. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think Washington Post had a good write-up of it, and Polygon, I think it went up today or yesterday, they also have a good write-up. So if you want to read more about it in a safe place, or, you know, not go to 8chan, I wouldn't recommend going there. But I think Polygon and Washington Post did a good job writing it up, and I'm sure you can find it other places as well. But it's one of those things that I feel like video games have come a long way, and things like this... you know, Paula Abdul put it best, right? Two steps forward, I take two steps back. It's, you know, what's that old saying we have here in Texas? Fool me once, shame on. What I'm saying is, I don't like to be fooled. Remember that George Bush quote? That was funny.
You made a reference to the late 80s, and then to correct it, to make it more relevant,
yeah,
moved it all the way up to the early 2000s.
Hey, so, dude, I'm nothing if not an enigma inside Edward E. Nigma. it's problematic, and I think it's super problematic that this I don't know. I don't need to belabor the point, but it's problematic and it sucks that it happened. And I too enjoyed what the publisher seemed to be doing, publishing wise, in the games they were making. And this sucks. So I hope what they've said externally is one thing, but hopefully internally they figured this crap out.
it's a thing I don't understand. I will say about our industry in general, just why as a people are we so bad at apologizing? Like,
yeah,
there are so many things that if we would just be like, yup, messed up, and then acknowledge it, apologize, move on, it wouldn't even be a story. But every single time, we're only 3 months into 2019, and there's already a dozen of these we can talk about where people are like, I don't know what happened. It's like, yes, you do. Just, admit you messed up. Like,
no, I was hacked.
I was hacked. My brother did it. My dog ate my homework. I'm not saying that everything is excusable. But I am a big proponent. If you read my Twitter, I am very big into the, listen, we all grow. We have to have room to grow. Sometimes we mess up. So it's okay to make a mistake as long as you're apologetic for it and don't try to throw other people under the bus. But man, these trash fires keep happening where people are like, it wasn't really my fault. You see, the planets were aligned and I was not in my right mental state.
So well said, Stephen. That's why you're a global citizen of gaming. That's No, very well said. And I agree wholeheartedly. All right, let's move on. And we got to thank our first sponsor. Well, we got to thank our sponsor, Molecule, new sponsor. Molecule is a complete reinvention of what an air purifier is. It's not just an improvement on existing technology. This is a new kind of air purifier. And I have to admit, I did not know how big a deal air purifying was in my life for far too long in my life. But now that I have kids and I understand that I live in Los Angeles, where the air is terrible, and I see my kids, coughing and wheezing at night, and I have doctors that I go to, my kid's pediatrician, who says, you should maybe use an air purifier. This molecule is a completely new approach. This was developed by a scientist who suffered from asthma and who was frustrated by the fact that HEPA air purifiers didn't relieve his own son's symptoms. So he spent 20 years developing a completely new way of removing indoor air pollutants. And Molecule, what it does is it replaces 70 years of antiquated technology. It's a breakthrough in science that's fully capable of destroying air pollutants at the molecular level. So it has this PICO technology that goes beyond the HEPA filtration. It doesn't just capture pollutants, but it destroys the full spectrum of indoor air pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than a HEPA filter can trap. This is really important for people that suffer from asthma or have allergies. And one customer of Molecule said that she was able to breathe through her nose for the first time in 15 years. It's pretty awesome. It's a clean design with high quality excellence. They call it the Apple of air purifiers. It's really cool. This can transform the way you sleep. It was backed by the EPA. So, don't just take my word for it. And was extensively tested by third parties and verified. So Molecule is a really important thing, I think, if you want to sleep better, especially if you have asthma. It might be a great thing for you to look into. And it has been effective and verified by science, but most importantly, tested by real people. They have already helped allergy and asthma sufferers around the country better cope with their conditions and significantly reduce their symptoms. It's pretty cool. So for $75 off your first order, visit molecule.com. That's molecule.com. And at checkout, enter DLC. Again, molecule.com and the promo code DLC at checkout get you $75 off. It's pretty cool. Sleep better, breathe better, clean your air with Molecule. All right, time to talk about the games that we have been playing. And Steven, you brought up a game that neither Christian nor I have really played, but we've heard a lot about, and that is Dead by Daylight. You said you have been playing quite a bit of it.
Yeah, that's it's my new guilty pleasure at the moment. Especially with my my personality is always the ultra positive and really just trying to shine out that light of always being upbeat, and yet I enjoy going and murdering things. I like killing survivors. It's very cool. I like the game format. I like the way that they sort of took that. Y'all remember Evolve and what a disaster that was. They really tried with a good idea, and Behavior just came out and did it better. You know, one person versus four people who are trying to survive. It's just one of those things that just doesn't seem to go away. It's actually like 4 years old now, and they just keep it fresh with new content all the time.
Yeah, there was a period there where it felt like these asymmetrical multiplayer games were going to be like the new hotness. You know, Evolve was coming out, and it felt like there were like two or three other games that we're all jumping on this bandwagon. And you don't really see that much anymore. I mean, Battle Royale has taken over the world, of course, but it's interesting to see this game that came out in 2016 is still enduring. People are still playing it. People are still passionate about it like you. What do you think about the way they handled this formula that seems to work?
You know, I think the important part that Behavior focused on was number one, they understood that no one wants to feel ganged up on. And that was, I think, the problem that Evolve fell to, is that when I know personally I felt this way and people I played with felt this way. You hated to be the monster. It was not fun. Yeah. You were hunted down. It was not a fair scenario. The monster was not overpowered. It could barely fight one person, let alone four. It was designed so that the four players would have more fun than the monster. The monster became a chore. Now you have this game that's, you know, it's not like Friday the 13th. It's not like Evolve. It's where if you're the killer, you have just as much fun as the people trying to survive. And so the survivor gets the fun of being with friends, and the person alone gets the fun of being overpowered and murdering. And it's, you know it's that balance is right. I think they're doing really good with that. And like we were talking about off air too, I know you both felt passionately about this. The Twitch culture, the behavior is embracing streamers, and not on like a Fortnite buy all the popular streamers level. Love you, Fortnite. But at the same time, they're all streamers. Every single behavior person who's in the front lines is also a streamer. They stream their own game. They play their own game. And I think it's really cool to see a studio that's that invested in something that we all care about, which is just playing video games.
Yeah. It's a great point. That's a great point. So it sounds like you prefer being the killer. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely a main killer kind of person. Unfortunately for me, it's an accessibility concern. One of the things with the being a survivor is you have to tap the space bar, like, repeatedly and quickly. It's not something that is within my realm of possibility, so I just stay away from it. But even said, you know, I love that aesthetic. I love the way that it's not super scary, super spooky. It's just fun. And there's a couple of people that don't like to watch me play it who do like me and like my community, but and they don't support murdering games, which is okay. But for the most part, people are like, it's fine. It's a good game.
Is it? I mean, for a while there, streaming culture kind of embraced Friday the 13th, which was a game similar like to that, because it created these kind of humorous, you know, ridiculous, over the top moments, especially paired with its numerous bugs and glitches. Does Dead by Daylight kind of maintain a serious tone, or is there some humor with all of that stuff as well?
The good thing about Dead by Daylight is that it's sort of one of those make what fun you have out of it games. You know, there's streamers out there who don't kill. They just run around and, you know, slap some survivors and then carry them around and they dance and they make cool little graphics on their stream and they just have fun with it. And then there's other streamers who are just like, I'm going to murder everything and let's taunt the killer and let's make them sad. So I think it's all about what kind of community you want to belong to, what kind of game you want to play. I like that difference of allowing various playstyles.
That's cool. So again, that's Dead by Daylight. Also, I noticed that you're playing constantly. I've watched a few of your streams playing Rocket League. You're a big Rocket League player, right?
I am. Yeah, it's not the easiest game to stream because it's old now. It's almost a classic. Someone literally called it a classic in my stream the other day, and I was so sad. We're not this old already. I like it. I like the competitive nature. I'm good friends with Psyonix. I think they're good people over there. They support disability rights, and they actually added the Able Gamers flag as the very first charity flag that was in that game. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, they're very supportive. I love them for it. And then the game is just cool. If you're into various modes of watching cars try to score oversized hockey pucks and soccer balls, it's your kind of game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about on the show about games that you're married to versus games that you date, you know, and Rocket League has remained that game that people are married to. That just it just scratches an itch. You can get in and get out fast. It's fun and remains fun, and it has such a high skill cap that you can always get better at it. So yeah,
yeah, exactly. I always think like it's fun. You know, me and my friend Danielle always just have, you know, good times doing that. And, you know, there's a lot of cool ways you can interact with your friends, I think, at the same time.
Christian, have you, delved, I know you were among the two of us, you were much bigger fan of that game or got its hooks into you much more than it did me. Have you played it recently?
Yeah, I still probably play it once a month. Maybe it slips to 6 weeks. I play it primarily on my Switch, but it's there. It's always looking at me and I'm like, I should play. And then it slips to 6 weeks if there's been like a big update because they're so good about keeping that game interesting and updating things. So I'm like, I am going to play it. And then I'm like, I need to download an update. And I'm like, okay, fine. I won't play it. I won't play it right now while I update. But it's a phenomenal game and it keeps getting better. And I like the way that they've implemented IPs over the years. It going back to our Borderlands 3 discussion, I kind of want them to make something new because I really like that team and what they've done with Rocket League. But I don't know what they do. You know, I'm like, I'm waiting for them to do something that just blows me out of the water. It's totally unexpected because Rocket League is perfect. It's such a great game. It is funny.
The thing there is that what makes Rocket League perfect is that it's so simple, right? It's a very simple idea done really, really well. And I feel like if you get it too complex or kind of, you know, try to layer on too much that it just breaks what's so beautiful and elegant about it.
How do you two feel about the fact that you can play with your friends anywhere? The recent Friends update they did where you can be on a PC, a Switch, and a PlayStation all at the same time.
Yeah, it's incredible.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And I love that they were champions of that, you know, trying to get that done before Fortnite was so big that it kind of broke down those barriers. But it's awesome to see them update that game and keep that going. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
I think that's the future, right? I think in 5 years, people are going to have a hard time remembering when that wasn't the case. You know, I think that it's going to become so ubiquitous that you can just cross play across any device that people are going to go, oh yeah, remember when it was really hard? In the same way we, you know, have a hard time remembering, you know, back before online, whatever, you know,
I remember bringing a CRT TV over to my friend's house. Yes. And multiple Xbox consoles and an 80 foot LAN cable,
right? Yeah, but I think it's going to become just required that if you have a game on multiple platforms, you have to be able to play together. And I welcome it. I mean, I think it's just a better experience for the end user. So, you know, bring it on. I also think it's just where the industry is headed, and we're going to expect it at a certain point. All right. Christian, what is on your playlist, my friend?
Well, I know we have a game in common. Do we want to start there? Or do we want to save that?
We can start there if you want.
Let's start with Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove. It came out, I guess, what, earlier in the week, last week. I got a review copy.
As did I.
Dude, this is the perfect example of a game that... And we talked about this for Halo Master Chief Collection or that, you know, the anniversary or like the Gears of War remaster, where it's like, I'm playing Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove. And it's Toe Jam and Earl 1. Like it's exactly how I remember Toe Jam and Earl 1. I actually went and watched some videos of Toe Jam and Earl on Genesis just to remember what that game actually looked like and played like. But they promised capturing the essence of Toe Jam and Earl 1 when this thing was kickstarted, to bring it to modern consoles and to update it and this, that, and the other. And I think this game has to be one of the best examples of this is what we said we're going to do, and we 100% did it.
Yeah, like, I don't think you should gloss over that fact that it was a Kickstarter either, because we have many times hammered on all of the big headline games that underdelivered a big Kickstarter promise, or are vaporware, you know, these big high-profile Kickstarter games that raise a bunch of money and then come out and don't deliver on all the big promises they made, or disappoint people, or just never come out. Here is the opposite example of exactly what you said. They did a Kickstarter. They said they were going to be the original creators of this, who are going to make a Toe Jam and Earl for modern systems that feels old school, but has all the modern trappings, looks and performs beautifully.
Four player co-op now, all this
online.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they did it, right? They delivered it. It took them a while, but they did it, and they raised, you know, a lot of money, and it seems like all that money is on the screen, right? It really is a poster child for, hey, Kickstarter can work.
Yeah, I'd love this to be in Jason Schreier's next book or whatever, right? Like Blood, Sweat, and Pixels 2, because I think this game did have an interesting development where it launched on Kickstarter, then I believe it was Adult Swim Games signed on to publish, and then that went away and they kind of did their own thing, and then it was released physically, or is being released physically, through Limited Run Games, and it took longer than it was originally planned. But yes, 100% they, in my opinion, delivered on their promise of what they said this game was going to be when it was launched on Kickstarter. And it just, I mean, it's 90s Nicktoons. You know, if you don't know anything about Toe Jam and Earl, it's 90s rap, big chains, backward baseball caps. 90s Nicktoons is the best way for me. It's just so silly, and the sense of humor, it wears its heart on its sleeve. You're
it's kind of wholesome in a way. I mean, there's like scatological stuff, there's farting and stuff like that, but yes. It's basically just goofy, like what an 8 or 9 year old thinks is funny,
or a 38 or 9 year old. And it gets hard. It's still a roguelike, and that the levels kind of are different every time you go through them. And you get toward the end of the game, or a playthrough of the game, I should say, and you're collecting pieces for your ship, just like you were in Toe Jam and Earl, and all the humans, well, most of the humans are in your way and doing some silly thing. And toward the end, it felt kind of like, I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. It's not quite a bullet hell, but it had a feeling of that, where it's like, the path to move around on this map was very limited. And while it otherwise would be frustrating, it's funny when you're like, oh, I can't go over there because the opera woman will sing and I won't be able to move. Like, that's your concern, you know?
Yeah.
I love
on a Segway is going to run me over.
Yeah. The Paul Blart mall cop is going to get me. And again, while frustrating, I think conceptually, maybe it was so charming in how it plays out, that your presence, you don't know what they do. Sometimes, so you're like, a lot of them are helpful, and I don't know what it is. It feels like a third of them are super unhelpful, and one is like, it yells out where you are. So you're like sneaking around, like through sleeping humans, or you know, whatever it is. I see the piece of the spaceship, I'm going to go get it. I'm like, oh, I'm going to use this present. It's probably sneakers, because every present sneakers. And then it's like, I'm over here. I'm over. And well, I'm like, son
I kind of feel like I imagine a large percentage of the people listening to us have no idea what we're talking about. It kind of sounds like nonsense.
It is.
It is nonsense. You're right. But maybe it would go ahead, Steven. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, isn't that kind of the point, though? I mean,
oh, 100%. But I was just going to like maybe backtrack for a second and just kind of, if you've never played Toe Jam and Earl, which you got to imagine a lot of people haven't, because it's a very old game, 3, 2, something like that?
I wasn't born yet when it came out. I don't remember.
Right, sure. the idea of this game is wacky. I mean, you described the aesthetic, which is, you know, 80% of what's going on anyways, the aesthetic of this game. But just pure mechanically, what you do is pretty random. You just want – I mean, the idea is that Toe Jam and Earl are from the planet Funkatron, and they accidentally destroy Earth, I guess?
No, they steal their friendship. They crash it on Earth. The pieces are scattered everywhere, and they have to collect
it. It's not Earth because it's flattened out. Whatever. It doesn't matter. The fiction doesn't matter. The point is, you are on these big two-dimensional maps that you don't know you know, that are sort of covered by fog of war, and you don't know what's around the corner, and you're exploring, finding presents, and you literally don't know what that is. It could be something good, could be something bad. Opening those presents, which gets you XP, running into weird things.
The presents are also power-ups. They're power-ups. I feel like most of them are like spring shoes. They're power-ups that also can create problems. So it's like you get spring shoes and that's great, but you're on a difficult to traverse part of a map. Then you might jump off the map and that's bad, or sneakers, and then you'll run in. But so they're power-ups, but there's always a risk reward of one, you usually don't know what it is, and two, how it's going to implement when you apply it.
There are all these weird characters that you interact with, and you get money, and you can pay money to do certain things and unlock stuff. But the game, my question to you, I guess, is if you never played Toe Jam and Earl, do you think you like this game? To the person that's never played Toe Jam and Earl, and they're like, I want to know whether it's worth my time and money to play this game. Will I like it?
Yes, with the caveat of it's a feel-good game. I don't want to call it cotton candy because it's not quite that disposable. It's
definitely not cotton candy. It's more like exploding cotton candy. It's something
pop rocks
weird. Yeah, pop rocks. That's good. It's something weird in your neighborhood. It's
enjoyable. It's feel
it's a
good.
Novelty. Yeah.
Yeah. It's feel good. It's a good time. You can play it with your kids or with your partner. It's funny. You're laughing. I think co-op is where it really shines. That's how it was on the Genesis 2, where my brother would open a present and be like, you have spring, everything is novel and silly.
It's goofy. Yeah. It's, I don't know if it's funny. It's goofy.
And it wears its heart on its sleeve, and it doesn't have to be that hard. And it's just a good time. I don't think you'll, be waiting for the bell to ring at school and being like, I got to get home and see what happens on World 7 of Toe Jam. It's not that, but it's just a good time on the couch. And I think that's more than enough. So I think if you're on the fence of it, watching a video, an audio podcast is maybe not the best place to picture this game. Watch a video. And then if that 90s aesthetic speaks to you, that Rugrats kind of mentality strikes a chord with you, I think you're going to love it. And if not, then it's not for you. And that's fine too. That's my opinion.
I disagree slightly. I think if you don't have any nostalgia for this, I don't think you will love it. You may, but I don't know. This doesn't seem like it was made for people that don't already know Toe Jam. And that's totally fine. In fact, I kind of respect that. That's what they said they were going to do. They were going to bring this back for the people that have this soft spot in their heart for this cult classic video game. It didn't actually do well when it first came out. It's a cult classic. It's a weird game. Even in its time, it was weird. And I don't know if people who don't have nostalgia for that time period, for that specific game series, will love it. But maybe I'm wrong. Steven, did you play the original Toe Jam and Earl?
I did. I loved the original. It was fun. It was goofy. It was wacky. It was, so sitting here thinking about the words that you guys are trying to describe this way.
Trying is the key. Yes.
What really pops into my mind is the game is violent without maliciousness. And that's, whenever I'm thinking about a game like PUBG or even Fortnite, it's murdering with the intent of ending someone else's fun, even in, a Lara Croft or an Uncharted, it's, being mean for the sake of comedy, attaching balloons to a cow to send them off in an Uncharted kind of way, which is cool in its own right. But Toe Jam and Earl is just a fun game. I don't know about you two, but I know in my friend circles, we're constantly looking for a game that is just nonsensical fun, just for the sake of fun. And there's really not a lot of them out there. So I think this kind of fills that niche a little bit.
Well said. And I think that they did a really smart thing in leaning so heavily into the co-op aspect, because first Toe Jam and Earl was sort of classic couch co-op. And now to be able to do that across the internet and on the couch is great. And it's really where the game shines, to be able to play with somebody else, and you're exploring one part of the map, and there's a whole system for pinging and, talking to one another within the game that helps with communication. So,
and I think it's Toe Jam's mom, one of the later characters, you like high five to give your partner health. So it's like, you know, great to play with someone who isn't as good at games necessarily. Or, and also what a fun mechanic to give. You just walk, whoopsh, it fits the world so well.
Yeah. And you haven't even mentioned how good it looks. Like, it's Toe Jam and Earl was, of course, a Sega Genesis game, and it, you know, was very pixelated and had, it looked good for its time. But this game is really attractive. I think it's really well drawn. I mean, it's, the art is lovely.
Yeah, it looks like what I was trying to say at the beginning. It looks like how I remember it looking.
Yeah.
And then when you look at the original, you're like, oh, the original one looked awful and this looks amazing. But it looks like those 90 Nicktoons come to life. And I think the way they blend like the sprites or the characters and kind of the 3D world, like isometric view, works really well. The animation, like the loads of the elevator, it's like, it's not 60 frames per second. It's probably 4, you know, but it's supposed to be like that, right? Like, it's like that bow, 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 kind of like harsh animation, but it works really well. I think we talked about this. We talked about Kingdom Hearts 3 and some of the other games. It's this game, Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove, is a 10 out of 10 Toe Jam and Earl Back in the Groove game. You know, like,
yeah, yeah, you kind of can't score it in the abstract. It has to be in the context of, it is exactly what they wanted to make.
Yes.
And so in that sense, it's top of the score, right? It's not going to be, you know, you can't compare it to God of War or something. It's you have to compare it to what it's trying to go for, and what it's going for.
I think Christian really hits the nail on the head here by saying it looks like what you remember it as. You know, listen, we all have favorites from when we were kids, whether you're 39, 29, or 19. You have things you loved 10, 20, 30 years ago, but you remember it with updated technology. You don't remember it how it was, right? I mean, okay, for a perfect example, you know, I am a Star Trek fan. I used to love TNG. Sure. Best Star Trek, in my opinion, that they've ever made.
Agreed.
But you ever tried to go watch it? The graphics are garbage. I can do better than that with no degree on my computer right now. But in my mind, when I remember it, it's much, much better. Much,
sure.
much better. Because your mind fills in the gaps. Like, oh, yeah, they have this technology. No, they didn't. Right. So, you know, I think same thing with video games. I think we really, really, in some ways, we're almost ungrateful for how good things look nowadays.
Yeah, I agree. It's so funny. It's even worse with Babylon 5. Oh, my God. If you go back and watch Babylon 5, you're like, they put this on television? But yeah. Anyway.
I need to give a quick shout out to MZ Shasta in the chat who did they commented God of Earl, which I think
God
would be
God of Earl. That's really funny.
How you compare it to God of War.
All right. So, Christian, I know you've played another game that's just brand new.
Yeah. Dead or Alive 6 is that game. And I'm embarrassed by it. And I don't want to bury the lead. I'm embarrassed by it. And I know when pre-release for this game, they talked about dialing Dead or Alive has been known for its, have been affectionately called jiggle physics, bouncing breasts in an unrealistic manner, overly large breasts that don't apply to the physics of the body. And something that maybe seemed cute or fun or innocent at one time, I don't know if it ever did, to me personally feels very out of place today in the way that this game approaches it. And while I think it dialed it back some, I think the game is still very problematic in that regard. So I don't want to ignore that stuff. I'll get back to it, but I wanted to make sure I address that up top. All of that said, Dead or Alive has always been kind of the third tier fighting game for me growing up, where I was much more into Virtua Fighter or Tekken, and then Dead or Alive was always this fun game I could play with friends that was very fast, but I never super got into the mechanics of the game. I understood its rock, paper, scissor mechanic of, I think it's like what holds beat punches and kicks, throws beat holds, punches beat throws, I think, if I remember correctly, and that's still how this one felt. And this feels like a Dead or Alive game. It's still very fast. They added the break gauge was added to this, which kind of, as you take damage, it fills up, and then you can undo either, I think it's all of it or half of it, depending. And one is like a break blow, where I think I have the name right. Apologies if I don't. And that can kind of counter anything. So it's kind of a get out of jail free card, so to speak. But you have to time it right. And then, or if you is it R1 on PlayStation? If you hit it multiple times, you'll do a combo that kind of reminds me of the Mortal Kombat X-ray combos, where it's like, you know, four or five hits and it's like slow motion and it gets brutal. And here you don't see the insides of someone's ribs breaking. It's kind of like you'll see their jaw, you know, like kind of really go as you land a punch to their chin. It feels very much like Dead or Alive 5 to me. Like if someone said this was the next iteration of Dead or Alive 5 with slightly shinier graphics, I'd believe it. I think there's two new characters. There's a decent amount of stuff to do for single players. It has a quest mode, which is where most of the unlocking happens. The caveat there is that I don't think you get to pick what you unlock, at least from my experience. It seems like you kind of get rewards and it goes to a random character's costume, which felt frustrating to me. If I'm getting that wrong, if I got that wrong, please someone tell me, and because I would love to be able to pick where that stuff goes. And it has a story mode that will take you a couple of hours to get through. But it's kind of disjointed, where it's like different chapters all over this grid, and like a new one pops up over here, but then there's another one below you here, but that's a different character story. And then there's like a cutscene, and sometimes it's just one fight, like one round, and then another load, and another cutscene. So I don't think it compares to what NetherRealm has done with its story, but I think it's better than even where Street Fighter V is now in terms of how it kind of presents a story. There's a lot to do. But I think its whole attitude is still very problematic. You can turn off the breast physics is an option, but it's on by default. They have a DLC pack, season pass, that I believe is almost $100, and it's a lot of risque costumes. And it's a super busty character who I think is from a King of Fighters game. And then the unlocks for the characters, it appears as if, in my opinion, the hardest to get costumes for these characters are the skimpiest or the most revealing. And I think that says a lot about what you're supposed to work toward and what is cool and what is desirable. And so, you know, typically in Fortnite or whatever, and you see this skin that's the very end of the battle pass that you're playing against someone with already, and you're like, oh, crap. You know, this person is very good at the game. They're going to be amazing. I want that. I need that. It looks so cool. And Dead or Alive 6, in my opinion, it presents, you know, floss barely covering nipples and genitalia and upskirts. In the replay mode, there's a free camera. And I think it's poor taste. And while I know that's kind of what the franchise has been built around, I think I'm personally more disappointed in it this time around, because it now feels like it was just lip service before the game came out saying, hey, we've learned from that. This is just going to be a fighting game. And it's not. So that's my monologue of Dead or Alive 6 that I'm sure people will get upset with me about. But I legitimately... As I was playing it, I think I texted you this, Jeff. I felt embarrassed. My wife was at the table working, and I felt embarrassed sitting there playing it. And I play a lot of dumb stuff, and it's disappointing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it really is what Dead or Alive is synonymous with at this point. I mean, after Beach Volleyball, of course, that really solidified that's what this franchise is, but they had the opportunity to evolve. I haven't played the game yet. I'm interested.
I got a review code, I should say. Sorry, I didn't mention that. I was provided a review code.
I mean, I'm interested. Did you have any fun with the fighting? Was the fighting
I really like their fighting mechanic. It's fast. It's faster than Tekken, in my opinion. It's much faster than Virtua Fighter. And that rock, paper, scissor mechanic of it that I think I do have right. It's punches, kicks are countered by holds, which is like what they call a parry, and then throws beat holds, and then punches, kicks. And then the break gauge is very interesting, because the break gauge, you build it up as you get hit, and it can really turn a fight. Because if you don't guess right, like you really need to vary your punches and kicks, because if you're just doing the same thing over and over again, then I know what you're going to do. And it's the fun of playing. Like rock, paper, scissors gets more fun the more rounds you play, right? Where it ends up being the Princess Bride, where it's, you know, never play a game of chance when death is on the line. I've got you figured out. And then you don't. And the way the break gauge can kind of reset that is really fun and interesting. But it's just the other stuff. It just keeps hitting me in the head with its problem. It, the costumes rip away in weird ways. In the story, the cutscenes, I think, are probably like two women will like bump into each other and then like one will fall down with her legs in the air. And like, that's I have two kids. You know what I mean? Like, I get it.
Your kids fall down all the time. They bump into each other and fall down all the time.
I understand how people are made is what I'm saying. But I just feel like, yeah, it was hard for me to distinguish the problems of the game that I feel are problematic with. It's just core fighting mechanics. And yes, I understand too the level of a hypocrite I am, where Bayonetta is a game that I adore, Bayonetta 1 and 2. I also think it's problematic. I don't think it's as problematic as Dead or Alive 6. But I also realize no one's perfect, and I can't justify why some things bother me and other things don't. I can only tell you how I feel.
Right. Fair enough. That's Dead or Alive 6, which just came out this week. I want to talk about Ape Out, which it's March, but right now it's my game of the year.
Whoa.
And I think that it might be, I would be surprised. I'm hoping, let's put it this way. I'm hoping there are games amazing enough to knock it out of my top five at the end of the year, but I doubt it. I suspect I'll be talking about this again in December and January when we're talking about our games of the year. Ape Out is incredible.
What are you playing on? Because it's on Switch too, right? Yeah.
I'm playing it on Switch. Yeah. So what is Ape Out? Well, it's been described by the developer as a game inspired by jazz, which may not be something that makes you excited to play a video game, but it should. And it's because it's not, you know, there's a lot of different things that can conjure in your mind when you hear the word jazz. Think the movie Whiplash. It's that kind of jazz. It's like drum, staccato, rhythmic.
Wait, that's Fortnite. That's people telling me I'm not good enough. Is that?
Oh, right. Yeah. No, it's not exactly that. It's that like fast jazz drumming. Okay. So what is the game? The game is a top down action game where you play as an ape that has been caged and has just broken out and is trying to escape from various facilities. I want to say level, but it's not level. They're organized into albums, which again is this jazz aesthetic that is really an interesting prism through which to view this game, because the game itself really has nothing to do with jazz, but it's cool. Like each section of levels, each grouping of levels is in an album. And then there's tracks on the album that are the individual levels. And each album takes place in a different venue that you as the ape are trying to escape from. So pure top down, the visual aesthetic is going to be hard for me to describe. You should look at screenshots, but I urge you to just buy this game. Just buy it. It's not very expensive. I think it's $15. Don't watch videos. Just play it. It will blow you away like it did me, I predict. I didn't really know much about it before I bought it. I bought it, played it, and I'm so glad I didn't know anything about it, because how it sort of reveals itself is so cool. But you are an ape. You're escaping from this confinement that you find yourself in, and you are trying to get from one end of a level to the other by surviving, mowing down the employees that are trying to stop you from escaping and are trying to shoot you and kill you. And the visual aesthetic, as I was saying, is crazy, but it does an amazing thing of sort of giving you a sense of what it might be to be an ape. the way the game looks, it's very flat, it's very plain, it's very solid colors, but then there's like sort of a scratchiness to everything. It feels like an animal that is scared and fight or flight. It feels like you're in fight or flight through the whole game, which you are. I mean, you are quite literally trying to escape, and it's a game where avoiding enemies is just as useful as taking them on head on. And so you are this very powerful ape who can fling human beings across a room and slam them into a wall and obliterate them in one movement. It, you can grab people and hold them and then toss them and smack them into each other. And just like it is such a – the violence in this game is expressed in such stark terms. It is fast and spontaneous and explosive, and you grab a human being, and you toss him into a wall, and you keep running, and you're running and running, and another a military person comes out of an elevator and starts shooting at you, and you try to avoid it, and you grab another person, and you hold them, and they panic and shoot, and so they shoot their buddy, and everything can die in one quick moment. There's no health bars. You know, you can be killed very quickly, very abruptly. The game communicates your health in a really brilliant way. If you're shot once, you start leaving bloody footprints to show that you are injured, but you get shot twice and you're basically dead. The game actually reminds me of playing – I mean, we've talked about old school games a lot this episode. It reminds me of playing something like Pac-Man or Space Invaders. It's that immediate. It's that – like you are instantly having fun. You are instantly engaged. My palms get sweaty playing this game because so all the levels are randomly generated, but they're of a theme in the context of the album you are playing. And so, you know, there's like a military installation that you're trying to escape from. And I don't want to reveal too much, but like the second one's a high rise building. And so they have these thematic elements, but the actual specific geometry of each level is random every time you start. So you are panicked, looking for exits, running through these areas, breaking through glass walls and running through things and grabbing doors and pulling them open. And you are madly trying to escape, trying to find the exit before these humans can gun you down. And you are slamming them into walls and they are exploding in a bloody mess, but all in very simplistic graphics. But it does this extraordinary thing of communicating the feeling that I would imagine a caged animal that is broken out would feel. The music, the way the drumming sounds, the sort of jazz drumming is cued to the things you're doing. You'll grab someone and throw them in, and a cymbal will crash as they splatter on the wall, and it'll like it gets your pulse pounding. It makes you feel disoriented and panicked and thrilled at the same time. And there's legit strategy. At the end of every time you die, it'll show you the little – as you die, it'll show you the full map of the level to show you how close you got to the exit and show you a line drawing of the path you took. So you kind of have a sense of how close you got to the end, but then you're right back into the game and playing again. It's addictive. It doesn't feel like any other kind of game. I mean, it kind of has sort of a Hotline Miami or there's a few other, you know, top-down action games that are fast like that. But the way it gives you the sense of being an ape, the way it visually and auditorially and action-wise, it puts you in that position. It makes you – I don't know. I'm gushing and I'm kind of rambling, but I feel very strongly that this game is a work of art. And one of the coolest, most interesting games I've ever played, and I think is going to be on my best of list at the end of the year.
Epic Rage in the chat said it's by the same developers as Hotline Miami.
Yeah, it's by Devolver, and they do all kinds of things like this. And you know, the PR people, full disclosure, are friends of mine, and they've been talking for weeks now that they think this is going to be one of the games that people are talking about all year because it is so different. It's not your typical shoot 'em up kind of game. It almost looks like it's being shot in shadows almost. There's no clearly defined, you know, graphics. It almost feels like you're playing Sin City, the video game. It's this different art style and different gameplay that we're just not used to. And I think, again, it hits that note where people are trying something different. And I think people are looking for different.
Yeah. And it's not just different for different sake, right? That art style for me really communicates this sense of being this animal and not understanding the human world, and sort of, you know, you were in the jungle and then you were brought into this cage and now you busted out and you're frantically in this crazy weird environment that you don't understand and nothing quite makes any sense. And I don't want to spoil anything for anybody, because how this game layers on new ideas as you progress it is one of the most thrilling things about it. But for example, like the lights go out at a certain point, and that's, it's crazy. It feels like what it must be like if you're an animal in the dark and there's things after you. And I mean, it is. And then at the end of each series of levels, at the end of each album, you do actually break out. And that feeling, I won't say what happens, but that feeling of actually getting out is so joyous and simple. But I mean, I cannot speak high enough about this game. It is infinitely replayable because of the randomness and the pickup and playness. Like it plays great on the Switch. It's simple. I mean, there's really only a few things you can do at any given time, but you're, like I said, I get my palms get sweaty playing it, because you feel a sense like I'm almost to the end of the level. I'm almost there. And there's a bunch of guys. Oh my God, they got all the elevators, three of them. I got to, and these moments of action just explode, and it happens so fast. It's quite something. I've never played anything quite like it. It is really amazing.
So it's the same publisher as Hotline, Devolver, as
right.
Steven said. But then the developer is Gabe Cuzzillo, and it looks like it's his second game. So that's awesome.
Yeah. I saw an interview with him, and he was talking about how he had this idea for this sort of quick flash of, the speed and the flash of action. And he's like, this doesn't make any sense for a human to do it. You know, it does make sense for, like, you read about these stories where a gorilla gets out of a zoo. He's like, yeah, that's kind of makes more sense. And he went from there. But man,
Dude, what I want now for this, having just really hearing about it now, I want them to do a Venom version, because this sounds like an incredible Venom game to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool that they do it as an ape, because it's one of those experiences where I played a video game and I went, man, we got to be nicer to animals. You know, it's like this animal, I'm playing as an animal that murders hundreds of humans. And I'm like, we got to be nicer to animals. But such is the case. Anyway, that's called Ape Out. It's on Steam. It's on Switch. I think those are the only two platforms. I could be wrong. But it is, I'm playing it on Switch. It is one of those games. For $15, just trust me, buy it, and thank me later. All right, Christian, did you want to mention anything else that you've been playing, or should we move on?
Fortnite Season 8 seems fun. I like the changes to the map. I happen to have some really good games, so I probably won't play it again because I don't want to ruin it for me. And then I guess you've been playing more Anthem. We can talk about it if you want. But what Anthem made me do is go back to Destiny 2, and I love it, and I can't stop thinking about it, and it's all I want to be playing. I haven't touched it in a very long time since Forsaken first came out. And now coming back to it, there's a lot for me to do, and their new season starting. And I was curious to see how Bungie taking over the franchise, blah, 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 blah. And I still love Destiny. It's real good. That's all I need to say about it. It's still Destiny, but I like it. Still like it.
Yeah, I am still playing Anthem, and I like it. I have fun when I play it. So I hope this game sticks around and improves and becomes, you know, Destiny 2 level of improvement over the original type deal.
Depends if they figure out how to reduce loading screens.
Well, we're going to talk about that, and let's do that by jumping in to some quick questions. We get quick questions submitted by you, our listeners, and you can send those to our email address, dlcfeedback@gmail.com, or by visiting our subreddit, 5by5dlc.reddit.com. There's a sticky thread there called Quick Questions 3.0. You can post. Let's start with the first. Actually, we have two from the same person. Andy Tudor sent two excellent ones. So we're going to start with this one. He says, quick question, what game memorabilia or peripheral are you mistakenly keeping a hold of because you think one day it's going to be worth something, but that hasn't worked out that way? He said, mine is a box copy of Steel Battalion with the insane 40-button controller and a special edition copy of Metal Gear Solid signed by Hideo Kojima.
Mm.
I haven't worn the T-shirt or the dog tags, but it ain't going to put my kid through college. Steven, do you have anything that you've been holding on to, any piece of gaming memorabilia that you think is going to go up in value or maybe is disappointing you that it isn't?
You know, it's so strange because we kind of laugh at this question, and at the same time, last Tuesday, a Hungry Hungry Hippos game sold for $100,000.
Yeah. So, he's laughing now. The Hungry Hippos are. That's who.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So mad when my mom threw out my original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from the '80s. But I have like a lot of the old boxes, particularly from my early days with Able Gamers. Companies like Blizzard would send us the collector's edition. So I've got like the original Diablo and Diablo 2 and World of Warcraft, the Lich King, and in the boxes with their manuals and all that. And they don't seem to rise in value ever. No one wants them. I don't know. And I can't make myself throw them out because I'm like, I know I'm going to throw this out. And 10 years later, it's going to be worth $3 billion.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's the big lie of collector's editions is that no one's collecting them.
No. We're all just waiting for Steven to throw his away. Like that. Yeah, yeah. The next day, we'll decide it's worth something. We just need to get rid of those one extra copies.
No, a friend of mine once said that collectors are the biggest geniuses in the world because they make their own fake economy.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Christian, how about you? Do you got any gaming memorabilia that you're just certain is going to, retire on it?
No, but I do have, I think of it as art and you need to enjoy it for what it is. And if it goes up in value, great, but that's not. You need to be comfortable paying what you pay for it or keeping it and having the space for it. Speaking of that, what Steven said, they make their own value. That is an interesting story about Action Comics and kind of how that hit the values it's hitting. And for years, it wasn't what it is now, right? So look that up on your free time. It's really interesting, I think. And I also think it's collector stuff is never valuable for the collector. It's always the kid or the grandkid where they're like, oh, my dad had that. My mom had that. Oh, no. It's never you. You're never like, in 5 years, this is worth a lot. It's down the line. My two that I have here that I can look at, I have Mario 3 sealed in box, not the one with the misprint or like the first run where the bros was in a different space. Just the kind of regular one, but I love it. I look at it every day. It brings me joy. And then I also have, staying on Nintendo, I have a lot, but staying on Nintendo, I have the first Splatoon Inkling amiibos in their box, that like pack of three, and they're next to my Mario, and I don't care if they're ever worth anything. They bring me great joy just sitting there. Jeff, I think you have a house full of this stuff, though, so I'm curious what your answer is.
Yeah, this is one of those questions that I could talk about for an hour and a half. It is I am somebody that can't get rid of stuff anyway. I have a hard time getting rid of anything because I always feel like, oh, I'm going to need that thing right after I get rid of it. But I'm particularly bad because I have, 12 plus years in the games industry where you go to events and they give you the thing and they send you the thing and you go to the, yeah. So I have boxes and boxes of this crap that I move from place to place with me. And I always feel like, oh, I need to set up an eBay account and sell this. And I'm never going to, I never will. But I have, like a GTA 4 full, Statue of Liberty that they sent me. I have like
a Mortal Kombat 11 hourglass.
Well, I think that actually is being sold, but that's a different story. I have like Project Natal memorabilia back before Kinect was called Kinect, it was called Project Natal. And I have like these plushies that they made for Kinectimals before it was called Kinectimals, and it says Project Natal on it. And I'm like, oh, that's going to be worth something. I got boxes of this junk and it just sits in my closet and I'm never going to sell it. And I know it's stupid to hold on to it, but I would feel dumb getting rid of it. So
we got to start doing our show at UCB again, just so we can give away our gaming memorabilia.
We used to do that when we were doing Double Jump. I would just bring boxes of stuff and give it to people.
Maybe that's the show. Sure. Maybe we just do the show where it's called, we'll make it that season two of, what's the show called on Netflix? What's your show called where? Whatever the
Storage Wars.
No, that brings you joy. You have the New York Times.
Oh, yeah.
Marie Kondo's.
Yes. Yeah. We just do that and come to UCB Franklin, and we'll give away our gaming stuff.
This doesn't bring me joy. Does anybody want it?
Does it give anyone else joy?
The real question is, how many Funko Pops do you each own?
I actually never got really into Funko Pop. I have to be honest. I have a couple, but
zero.
I
don't.
I, Yeah.
Zero?
Yeah.
You're not a gamer. Get out.
Okay, sorry. Thank you. Thanks for having me. It was fun being here.
Are you buried in Funko Pops?
You know, I own a good, dozen or so of them that people have given me. One of my friends took a Reinhardt and painted the hammer gold because I'm a gold Reinhardt on Overwatch. And another one of my friends knows I love Porgs from the Star Wars series. And for a limited time, Funko put out the foot and a half tall Porgs. So on top of my one collector shelf, I have literally a Porg that is half the size of my body. It's it's going to come to life and eat me one night.
Yeah, it could fall and kill someone. It's so big. Yeah. All right. So this is the second from Andy Tudor. He says, quick question. If you could start a game development studio tomorrow, what genre would you tackle first? Bearing in mind, you'll have limited knowledge, experience, tech, middleware, and budget. Would it be a side platformer, a puzzle game, a romance sim? You can't make your dream game yet because you're just starting out. But where would you start? Steven, what would you do if you were in this situation?
I think I would make some sort of choose-your-own-adventure storyline novel. I think I don't think we really tapped into that market much in the games industry. I think there's a large portion of players out there who really enjoy that kind of, you know, R.L. Stein, Goosebumps kind of, you know, fluffy, feel-good stories, maybe a little bit of horror, maybe a little bit of romance, depending on, you know, which genre you want to target. But that kind of, you know, choose your own, almost like the Bandersnatch from Netflix, only, you know, maybe done a little bit better.
Yeah. Better Snatch, my friend calls it. He's like, we need to make Better Snatch. And I was like, yeah, okay. Interesting. I'd play that. I'd be into that. Christian, how about you? If you're starting out your company, what are you going to make?
I'm going to abstain because I have a game and it is my dream game. And
you can make up something else. You don't have to use your actual.
Well, that's what I'd want to do, though. And it might happen. So I'll wait and maybe I'll get to talk about it for real.
This is I've got memorabilia in my closet and someday it's going to make me millions version of the answer.
I mean, I have a pitch deck in my closet.
I'm not telling you what I'm holding on to because it's going to be worth something someday for me.
I have a pitch deck it's seen the light of day, Jeff. It might happen.
I know. I'm rooting for it.
A game that I wish you or Steven would make. I want, and I know they've kind of done it, but it's the Monkey Island, right? And those games are incredible. And there's been some newer ones. And I don't know if I want those games again or that thing, but I want that time of my life. If that makes sense. That game.
I think that maybe this is hubris and biting off more than I should chew, but I would make a turn-based, probably role-playing game. But I think you could make sort of a smaller scale turn-based role-playing game. It wouldn't have to be, you know, I'm thinking like Octopath Traveler style or something that where the mechanics of the turn-based combat system was what I would spend all my energy on and not making, you know, giant cutscenes or, you know, big cinematic presentation. It would be more about making a really compelling action system in the, you know, a combat system in the turn-based style. I think I could do that. Something like, what was that game? Battle Chasers Night War, something like that. Although I know that game is a big production, but I think you could do something on a little bit smaller scale. Anyway. All right. We've got another couple. This is the one I was kind of teasing before. We got an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com from Ben Harris. He wrote a big defense of Anthem. He was like, I want to defend Anthem. I've been having a great time with it. And he writes about a lot of stuff. Basically, I don't know if he made a very compelling argument. He basically says the load times aren't too bad, the loot is fine, and the lack of PvP he's happy with. So he's just like, I'm fine with all of it. But the quick question part of it is that he says, I don't understand why people complain about the load times because they're not really any different from Destiny. Destiny just covers it up with pictures of your spaceship. And so the quick question is, would you rather have a sort of static, something to stare at in a loading screen, or know how much longer you're loading. So he says he prefers just having a bar telling him how much longer he has to wait rather than looking at something that's distracting him and is just arbitrary. So would you rather sit in a, you know, a vision of your spaceship without knowing how long it's going to be, or know how long it's going to be but not have much interesting to look at? Steven,
both. I mean, yeah, that's the honest answer. It's the cheapest answer I'm taking, because there's no reason in this day in technology that we couldn't have a space game with spaceships that has you looking around your cockpit with animated looping graphs in the background that show sort of pretty things for you to look at. And also on the dashboard is a tiny little loading bar that's showing you the progress of how far you're going.
Mm. Fair enough. Fair enough. I think that's probably the correct answer.
Christian, all right, everybody, bye.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. We don't have to choose, right, Christian, I guess?
If I did have to choose, I would choose something that makes sense in game, whether it be a spaceship flying, something that fits the narrative. And I don't think the bar at the top of Anthem shows you how much time you have left, because sometimes half of it goes in half a second, and other times the last third takes longer than that. I believe way back in early computing, I read too that those things were added, much like some crosswalk buttons. Like, there's just there for you to have a thing to look at. It's not actually doing anything, but it's like people feel better if they see that. So yeah, Steven's answer is the best answer. Of course, it's both. But if I had to pick one or the other, I'd pick the one that maybe makes sense within the narrative. And then while I appreciate this email, I think Anthem's loads are worse than Destiny's, because I don't have to enter a load screen to change my guns. I don't have to enter a load screen to change my helmet. And I don't have to hit a load screen to go from outside, if I'm on a planet, to go from the open world part of the planet into a cave. In an Anthem, as it is right now, I have to do all those things. And that's what holds it back for me.
Fair enough. I think the game...
Oh, wait, sorry. Kiefer's in the chat. Loading Screen Simulator, Game of the Year Edition. That's the game I'd make to answer Andy's question. I'll make a loading screen game.
That's the that's the ensures your company goes right out of business. We made a loading simulator. No, nobody wants to buy it? Okay.
Yeah, you laugh about that, but think about the first games that made the clicking simulator games where... You click on a rock, and then the game automatically plays itself for 6 hours. And
cookie clicker, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
After the game finishes loading, it just says game over.
Game over. No, it just has a credits, yeah. And it's the longest credits ever.
Press any button to start. Load, 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 credits. That's brilliant.
I think the game that did this the best is Skyrim. I loved being able to like look at a 3D rendering of an item and rotate it, and it gave me something to do, and it was cool. I just wish there were more of them. I feel like I repeated them too quickly, but I thought that game did it very well. And I think it also had a status bar. So it was exactly what Steven said, which is both. All right, final one. And this one I specifically want to bring up because Steven was here. This one comes from Jason T. He says, I love sitting on my couch with a controller because my work involves sitting behind a desk all day, but I'd love to have the comfort of a controller while solo grinding in Warcraft. My quick question is, what games would you love to be able to play with controller support, and what games do you prefer controller versus accuracy of mouse and keyboard? And I thought it'd be great to have you weigh in, Steven, and say what game is out there that you kind of mentioned this with Nintendo, but you would love to have more accessibility support and kind of give us a window into what Able Gamers is doing and what games are kind of lagging behind in that regard.
No, the great thing about adapters and different controllers is that there are very few situations where you must use a controller or you cannot use a keyboard and a mouse. I can show you how to use a controller on most all games, and I can show you how to use keyboard and a mouse on most all games. It just takes certain softwares like Joyt's Key, which translates your joystick presses into keyboard commands, or you can go the opposite way and use a program called a Zim, XIM, in order to translate your keyboard and mouse into your Xbox. So the good thing is you don't have to choose right now. I realize I keep coming at these questions with you could do both.
That's good.
But yeah, I mean, right now, unfortunately, Nintendo is the only one that's sort of keeping those questions at bay. And you know, I've gone head to head with Jeff Kaplan over Overwatch. You know, when they're coming out and trying to say that, you know, keyboard and mouse is overpowered and you can target things too easily. And, you know, I think here's my point. Well, I was thinking this earlier, you know, when Christian was talking about, you know, games that make him uncomfortable, and assuming that Jeff was going to be like, Steve, what do you think of this? And you know, my answer is always the same. Personally, I don't yuck anybody's yum. If you enjoy something, whether that's a certain kind of game, you know, you want to play a Laser Shoot Larry, you want to play, you know, something with a controller, you want to play with a keyboard, if that's your deal, then I think you should be able to do that. I think the part where we went wrong somewhere in the early 2000s was this console versus PC mentality that we got, where it's like, aha, PC master race, haha, consoles are the best, PC boys suck. It's like, why do we have to live in this culture where in order to like one thing you have to hate the other? Let's just all agree that we like different things, and that's okay.
Very cool. I agree. Christian, you have anything you want to say about that?
I prefer, to this question, I prefer a controller, just because I've never taken the time to become proficient with my WASD hand. I fumble around and hit the wrong key, and I grew up playing on controller, so that's where I'm most comfortable. Given the option, that's what I would use.
Yeah, I tend to prefer a controller as well. And there was a MOBA that came out, years ago now, that was a Lord of the Rings MOBA that was built for controller, that it was actually the first MOBA I ever played, that I really dug, because it's like, oh, direct control of the character. It felt like what they did with Diablo, bringing Diablo to a controller, you know, for PlayStation. It really just made more sense than click, 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 click. But then I fell in love with Heroes of the Storm and learned to love the click, click, click. But, you know, I always thought a MOBA on with a controller would be a smart way to go. But I've talked about being left-handed and just how, you know, I tend to just prefer a controller, so I don't have to deal with all that stuff. But then Steve is like, no, there's ways around it. And I'm like, oh, I'm just lazy. I'm just lazy.
They're really hidden. I mean, games industry doesn't talk about how you can do these different things. Personally, I just think it's kind of sad that at some point as a community, the game industry decided that we would bring our entire space in the world down to factions of people and divide them. And, you know, I like this, you like that, when, you know, it's possible to do everything. You don't have to choose one over the other. And it all comes down to me for immersion, right? You have this misguided opinion by some very high executives in the ivory towers of the game industry saying, we must make sure that they can't tell they're actually on a couch playing a video game. We're going to make sure they think they're in the TV screen. And no, dude, nobody's actually thinking they're Zelda swinging the sword. Famously, because I've told the story many times, I had a confrontation with ArenaNet over Guild Wars when I was telling them they needed to make the camera speed faster for those people who couldn't control something as slow as they were trying to make it. And their answer to me was, well, it would affect the immersion, so we have to leave it slow and difficult to move. I'm like, no, you don't. That's just crap. You just don't want to. There's no one out there who's like, you know why I like this video game? Because I have to move my mouse halfway across the desk. it's just not a thing. So yeah, I think it was misguided, and I think that we're coming around from that now.
Just like the sorcerers have to do. They have to move their mouse across the hole. Yeah.
This is the way that Merlin did it. So now we're going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It just breaks the immersion of being a fake thing that never existed.
Right.
Yeah. Well said. Awesome. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We do have our parting gift coming up. But again, if you want to submit quick questions in the future, you can send them to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or visit our subreddit, 5x5dlc.reddit.com. But stick around for those parting gifts. But Steven Spawn, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure having you.
No, thank you so much for the invite. I appreciate all of you putting up with my shenanigans and distracting from the technological conversation between Jeff and Christian. Thank you both for having me.
Oh, your shenanigans are the best part. That's why we invite you, is for your shenanigans. Can you tell people where they can keep up with you and your streaming and all the things that you do online?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to hear more musings about the way that the world should work, and as I make my pivot from gaming to life coaching, you can catch up with me on Twitter. .com/Steven Spawn, spelled like a baseball player, not like the comic book. And you can catch me on Twitter, Steven Spawn, spelled like the comic book, not like the other one. My friends thought it was hilarious to make my name Steve in Spawn. So that's what I went with. And you can always catch Able Gamers, the great company that I work with to help players with disabilities be able to play games no matter what. There's up to 42 million players with disabilities in the world with disabilities. You should think about supporting them any way you can. You can learn more, ablegamers.org or ablegamers on any social media channel.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Dude, first softball game. We had our first practice.
Oh, man.
Things went not perfect.
I heard there was a potential injury that happened.
She's fine. Talk to the parents. Fine. We got another practice coming up this week. We got our
Christian
first
is coaching. You should make that clear. You're coaching little league.
Little league softball. My daughter's first time playing. My first time coaching. We're in it together. And our first game's coming up this week. So that's not something that you can come. I mean, I guess you could come watch. That's weird. I'm not going to tell you where. That feels weird to me. But that's what's going on this week.
300 people that showed up to watch the league softball game.
True story. When I was in college, my freshman year, I went to SMU before I transferred to Rice in Houston. And a buddy of mine on the track team, there was like a little league field right near us. And they were challenge division, like traveling division, whatever that was called there. It's like really good middle school kids. And we started going to all the games and we started like making baseball cards for them. We got like really into it. And then the parents, they were like,
stop.
What? Do you know how creepy this looks? And we're like, what?
Go home and play Dead or Alive, the video game, and stop being so creepy.
It's like we hadn't thought about it, but we were like sitting there and be like, oh yeah, Brandon's up. Oh, he's 280, betting 286 this year. We got real into it. But that's what's going on for me this week. That's nothing that you can see or do necessarily, but I'm sure I'll tweet out how we do. So you can follow me on Twitter at Spicer.
And what's the name of the team so we can all root?
We haven't picked it yet. We're going to pick it. I'm going to let the kids pick it. We get to pick their own. It's been thrown out.
It's day one. You got to pick the name. Well,
we've only had one practice, and I told them to think about it for a week. What was thrown out immediately was Sparkle Pants, which I liked.
Oh, all right. Well, done and done.
And I also liked Strong Hearts. So
Sparkle Pants, Strong Hearts. Why choose?
Why choose?
Do the Steven Spawn approach. Yeah. You just do both.
Yeah, to take both. And then I stream this show. It's typically Sundays at 7:15 p.m. Pacific time, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. Jeff, what about you?
Well, I do another podcast all about movies and TV shows. That's called the Slash Filmcast. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com or wherever you get podcasts. This week we are talking about, we're doing Shoplifters, which is an interesting Japanese film. But check that out over at slashfilmcast.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And again, if you want to email us for any reason, ask a question, make a comment, we'd love hearing from you. Do that at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. All right, let's wrap the show up with our parting gifts. Steven, do you have a suggestion for something to help people get through their week?
You know, I always like pizza. Pizza always helps me get through my week.
That's a good suggestion.
If we're talking about just random things, I have actually been enjoying the Netflix series Umbrella Academy. That's been my go-to guilty comic book movie pleasure for the week.
Yeah, I heard it just got green-lighted for a season 2, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, a lot of people aren't digging it, but, you know, I like the kind of nutso nature of it. It's not like anything else that's been on comic book. Let's face it, we have comic book saturation right now between Marvel and DC, so it was like, oh, is this going to suck? But no, it was sort of like, what if there were a couple of real superheroes, and how messed up would their lives be? Turns out, a lot.
And for a TV show, man, the effects of the digital monkey are real good.
I'm telling you, I wish I had biceps the size of my head. Jeez, oh man.
All right, Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
If you happen to be here, I'm holding it up. I got my 8-bit-o Genesis controller. It is the M30. And it kind of looks like a mix between a Genesis 6 button and like the feel of a Sega Saturn. I love it. I think it's beautiful. It feels good in the hand. I'm very excited now. My analog Genesis should be getting, I think they ship in April. So that's what I got this for. And toyed with it some, but its real purpose is going to come when the analog shows up. But it's nice. 8-bit-o, I love. I have their Super Nintendo one. I'm a big fan of their controllers, and I really like the way this Genesis one feels. It's the 8-bit-o M30.
My favorite thing about when you actually have something in your room is that I can hear you turn away so that you can grab it.
Yeah.
It's great. Great for audio. Great for audio.
Well, if you can hear it, then it is good for audio.
All right. We got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us by Aaron Trahan, who is at GameJumperX on social. Aaron says, love DLC and all your guys' wonderful content. I have a parting gift for everyone. Not sure if it's been mentioned before, but Jonathan Mann has been doing Song a Day for 10 years, where he writes, records, and uploads a song each day, no matter what. He's an amazing talent and truly inspirational. One of his latest songs / videos is all about the show The Good Place, and it's absolutely amazing. I hope you guys will check it out. Google Jonathan Mann, M-A-N-N, to find his songs. They are delightful. I can second that. Thank you, Aaron, for sending that in. If you want to have your parting gift on the show, dlcfeedback@gmail.com is where you send it. My parting gift is the movie Free Solo, which I just watched for the first time. It won the Academy Award for Best Documentary Feature. It is incredible. It is the story of an insane person who decides to climb mountains without any safety equipment. And it's hard to watch at parts for me, even though I knew the ending. I knew, I knew what was going to happen. But it's like heart in my throat type stuff, because he climbs El Capitan in Yosemite, which had never been done by a person without any safety equipment. And the way it is shot is unbelievable. The look into the circumstances surrounding that feat, his girlfriend, and she's just like the sweetest thing, who deserves way better than this guy who's just trying to kill himself. and the people that film it, knowing they could be filming this guy plummeting to his death, which is just like hard to wrap your head around. It's an extraordinary experience and beautifully shot. So I saw it streaming. I think I got on Vudu, but it's a movie called Free Solo. Highly recommended.
It sounds amazing, but as somebody who has never walked and always used the power wheelchair, I'm just saying to you able-bodied people who want to climb up a mountain with no safety equipment, I think you're wrong. I think there's better things. Walk on a beach. Go pet a cat. Like, there's so much better things you can do with your ability to walk than climb up a mountain with no safety gear.
You know what? I'm going to agree with that wholeheartedly. I think this guy is very dumb. But yes, I wholeheartedly agree. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Steven Spahn and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to all the folks in our chat room for hanging out with all of us in real time. We appreciate you guys being there and contributing to the show, making it better. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those cool bumpers. And thanks to all of you who listen. We appreciate you. We will be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.